Motopod, proudly supported by Roadskin, a UK label specializing in protective outerwear for motorcyclists. Modern biker clothing that you can wear all day long and engineered to save your skin. For the road, for life, visit roadskin.co.uk.
Welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is Rich, wishing you all a very happy 2025 on behalf of myself and Jim and the wider Motopod backroom. Hoping everybody had great Christmases and New Year breaks, etc. It's around about a month since Jim brought you his chat with Michael Gugis, which hopefully everybody enjoyed. Sorry for the radio silence since then. It's going to be about a month since Jim put that show out, but this is going to be episode number 794. To be honest, with 2024 season being as hectic as it was, it's been good to have a few weeks off, so hopefully that's fine with everybody. As I've been promising and teasing for what seems like, or actually is, months, this is the collection of interviews that I collected all the way back in August of 24 at the Silverstone MotoGP round. Now, I've focused on the Moto3 riders with this particular show. Following this one, I've got a few interviews to put on a separate show on the Moto2 side of things. So that one will feature Senna Agius, Sergio Garcia and Tony Arbolino. But in terms of today's little collection, we have David Alonso, Jacob Ralston, Ethan Ortola and Joel Kelso. Now, I did deliberate if it was actually too long since I recorded these to actually put them out. But having listened back through and done a bit more editing on them, I decided there's still some pretty good content in there. Even though the championship moved on, the championships were decided, people have moved from Moto3 to Moto2 in some cases, etc, etc. But nevertheless, there's still some good stuff in there, I think. So hopefully people will enjoy what the riders have to say. In terms of David Alonso, as is often the case with these sorts of chats, they happen in garages or hospitality areas. And in the case of David Alonso, Jacob Ralston and Ethan Ortola, I actually recorded them on the Thursday. So there's a fair bit of setup going on. So again, apologies if there's some clinking and clanking and banging and crashing in the background. In terms of David Alonso, well, we've spoken about him an awful lot on the show. As you'll hear, David is a very thoughtful young chap, has a very wise head on very young shoulders, as exemplified by what he says about his approach. Clearly, he's trying to keep himself calm, but it's quite obvious to everybody, as we've spoken about a great deal on the show, that he's destined for big things. But obviously, Moto2 this year is going to be a big challenge, and we're all really interested to see how that one's going to go. After David, we have quite a long chat with Jacob Ralston from Australia. Again, really great insight into a young rider that's come from the other side of the world, established himself in Europe, and had a really strong rookie campaign. Jacob actually finished 15th in the standings at the end of the season. It's worth just pointing out, and Jim and I will probably touch on it when we have our first show of 2025, but we heard the news a day or so ago that Jacob had had a bit of a spill in a training accident. I'm not sure exactly of the details, but he has damaged some vertebrae in his neck by the sounds of it. I don't think he's in mortal danger, but obviously it's a difficult and unwanted start to the season for him. So we wish Jacob a speedy recovery. These guys do have a habit of bouncing back very quickly. So yeah, hopefully Jacob will be back on his Moto3 bike in the Tech 3 team fairly soon. We then have a quick chat with Ethan Ortola. Again, interesting to note that Ethan actually says that Silverstone, not one of his more favoured tracks, albeit he goes pretty well there. And it would indeed prove to be the case for those that can recall the Silverstone weekend that Ethan actually won the race from David Alonso with Colin Vea in third place. Although he was somewhat close to David Alonso at the Silverstone stage of last year's championship, as we know, David went on to a string of just unbelievable results, really, and Alonso would eventually take the championship by a somewhat bewildering 165 points. Like David Alonso, Ethan Ortola does move up to Moto2 as well this year, so again, lots to focus on to see how those guys progress on into the middleweight class. To finish up, we have another quick catch-up with Joel Kelso. People will remember that Jim spoke with Joel a couple of times at the COTA weekend at the early stages of the 2024 season. So it was kind of cool to catch up with Joel again. Little highlight from the talk with him. Well, interesting his thoughts on the potential of Liberty coming into the sport. As things stand, as I record this little intro piece, which is being done on the 23rd of January, the Liberty deal still isn't across the line. In fact, it's been delayed for some weeks or months, I think, whilst it goes through further scrutiny in terms of European competition law. I think most people think it's going to happen, but obviously the longer it goes on, the less clear that is. But all we can do is just wait and watch this space, I guess. So there we go. As I say, I apologise profusely. Having recorded this stuff at Silverstone back in August, I promptly went on holiday for 2 weeks and then landed myself back in a mire at work. So one thing and another, with the season going on and the normal shows with Jim, it just became a bit of an impossibility, really, to squeeze these ones in, as well as getting all of the editing done. So apologies that these are so delayed. This wouldn't normally be the case. But every cloud has a silver lining, so if nothing else, this is providing a little bit of decent infill, I hope, whilst we've got the winter break going on. Unbelievably, we're not much more than a month away from things really starting to get going again, so there's not too much time to fill in. But as I say, this will be followed by a Moto2 show, and then I did record a few other bits and pieces with other people that I bumped into in the Silverstone pit lane and paddock area, so I may put that one out as well. Jim and I are planning to have a catch-up to talk about all the news. Lots of team launches going on at the moment. Big controversy, of course, around the KTM situation. We'll know a little bit more about that, I think, tomorrow. Well, Superbikes are out testing in Jerez at the moment. And yes, the MotoGP guys will be out testing before very much longer as well. So there's plenty to look forward to. It's going to be an unbelievably busy year again. Having recharged the batteries a little bit, Jim and I are ready to get going with all of this stuff again. Jim will be at COTA. I still have aspirations to get along to Brno, if time and funds will allow. And obviously there'll be a smattering of World Superbike, British Superbike, Moto America stuff in there as well. So yeah, another busy year ahead. For now, let's just concentrate on getting these long overdue Silverstone shows out. Starting off with David Alonso. Okay, David Alonso.
Hey.
Aspar Team CF Moto Racing. David, a very, very warm welcome onto MotoPod for the first time. It's a huge pleasure to speak with you, and thank you for doing it in English, because I know this is something you're working on very hard.
Yeah.
Can we start by talking about your background a little bit? Your mother is Colombian, I believe. Your father is Spanish.
Exactly. You're on the right.
You were born in Spain, but you race proudly under the Colombian flag. Tell us about your decision to do it that way.
Yeah, I have a little bit mixed, Colombia and Spanish. I went. We decided this, I think like 2020, some years ago, with the team, with the family, for represent my mother's flag. And that was the main reason. And well, now I think it is good for me, for the country, for the championship, that it's another different nationality racing. Mm-hmm. Because it's nice when you see different nationalities racing between each other and see different flags.
And was it nicer for you not to be another Spanish considered rider? I mean, you are Spanish, you were born
in Spain, in Madrid. Yeah.
Your father was okay with the decision. Your mother was very happy, I guess.
Yeah, no problem, because at the end, the main thing is the person and the rider, so no problem.
Yeah. Now, when I'm looking at your junior career, it's very hard not to talk about you as the word is prodigy. I don't know, maybe it's an English word you don't know, almost like a child genius.
Okay, that's the English word.
Tell us a little bit about your childhood and how the two-wheeled racing began for you. Is it something from your father? Is he a passionate motorbike racing fan? Or
yeah.
how did it happen for you?
It's strange, because it came to me like alone. I mean, no one in my family had the relationship with the competition.
Okay.
Or the only relationship, my father, that had a bike for make some routes on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like the style of Harley Davidson, that type of bike.
Cruising.
Yeah, cruising.
Yeah.
And then when we put the bikes on the TV, I remember I watched it and they catch my interest. Mm-hmm. So for Christmas, for birthday, instead of ask for a ball, I ask always for two wheels, like something with wheels. And that's little by little, I get more and more toys with two wheels. And then at 5 years old, I take my first fuel bike.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I have to ask you, which was the rider that caught your attention the most? I'm guessing in MotoGP, was it Lorenzo or somebody like this, or Rossi?
Yeah, well, the rider it catch more my interest is like Marc Márquez. And then, but I remember also Stoner and Pedrosa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the guys of Honda, yeah.
Now, you won the European Talent Cup in 2020, and then the Red Bull Rookie MotoGP Cup in 2021. You did some substitute rides filling in Aspar in 2021. And then 2023, you became full-time in the team and finishing third in the championship.
Yeah.
This year, you're leading the championship by, let's be honest, a very significant 58-point margin. So how do you feel about your career to date, and how are you managing to keep your feet on the ground?
Yeah, well, the nice thing of this is that all my career is with Aspar team. They are like my second family, the family around there that I go around the world with them. So it's nice because since 2018, I grew up with them. They teach me for being first like a person, a good person, and then a rider. And well, my career, yeah, I'm happy with it because obviously some, no, they are a little bit challenged, but on the global is going up, a little step by step, getting more competitive. And yeah, I'm happy because I could win the Spanish Championship, the European, the rookies, and here in the World Championship also doing good things, but still a lot ahead, still a lot for improve, and we need to keep going and keep working, yeah.
Obviously, you have a long career ahead of you and different classes in the future, but yeah. You obviously have a very kind of level way that you manage your emotions, it seems to me. Yeah, is it something you think about a lot, or is it just natural that that's just your mentality, personality, let's say?
Honestly, we are working a lot on my mindset, on the emotions. For example, last year, we were working more inside the track. I mean, to improve my style, to improve my speed. But this year, I'm working more outside the track.
Interesting.
For work on my emotion, my ego. I don't know if in English it's the same word.
Yeah.
Ego.
Yeah,
exactly. My ego and all that kind of things that is not like riding style. It's not directly working on the bike, but it's very important because it influences a lot our weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm working on it because it's hard because you think you have the control. But then you realize that you need to work on it, and yet we are really focused on that.
And I guess this is one benefit of living and within the same team for a long period of time, that
you grow up together
and people can understand.
Helps a lot because the people here on the Aspar team know me very well, and we don't need to talk. Yeah, they just look my face and they say, "Oof, this now is serious or now it's angry." So that's a good point because we know very well each other.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Silverstone. You won here last year, so I assume you're quite a big fan of the track. I mean, it's a long track, it's a fast track.
Yeah.
I guess you like it for
6 kilometers.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to about this weekend? I mean, anything in particular? Just winning again, hopefully?
I mean, this track, the last year I win, but it's a track that I struggle a little bit and I need to work on it. Also, it's a long track. So there are a lot of corners. You don't do so many laps because it's very long. So you need to be focused on the weekend. And then we came from 3 weeks rest. So we need to get little by little the speed again, the championship speed that we forget in these 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So this weekend is like calm and try to do my best. But doesn't mean anything that the year before I won here, that doesn't mean anything.
Obviously, you have the Pirelli tyre this year, so are you looking forward to the Pirelli on this track? I mean, the Pirelli seems to give more feel.
Yeah, the Pirelli seems to be like faster on all the tracks, some more, some less, but it has a good performance with the new tyre for a qualified lap. So let's see here how also the grip, how it gets down for the race.
Yeah. Now, David, you're, in my opinion, a little bit unusual Moto3 rider because you have this incredible ability to always be fast in the front group but not getting into trouble through the first main part of the race, let's say, and then right at the very end making some incredible moves and then winning the race. So is this something that you're thinking about a lot during the race? Is it something you're making the tactic in your mind as you're watching the race and the riders around you, or is it just something that comes natural for you?
Yeah, I work in different areas, and that's one of them also. That I try to go on the race, but not only race. I try to think up on the bike, and try to think on the last laps, on the strategy of the best strategy for the last laps, and I try to think also on my rivals, where are stronger, where they have problems, for try to be as best as possible. So I try to think up on the bike.
And I have to watch the time, of course, as always. We kind of talked about this a moment ago, but tell us a little bit about your relationship with Señor Martinez. I mean, he obviously is kind of like a second father for you, and we've been talking about this family, but what's the relationship?
He had a lot of experience. I think 40 years on the on the World Championship, and so many. So, yeah, he's like the father of all of us because, well, he has a really good thing that he's a boss, really wants to be there. I mean, he feel the races. She have a lot of experience.
And do you and ask him for advice? I mean, do you have that kind of relationship where he tells you things and you ask him things?
Yeah, and then he can give us a lot of advice because he have a lot of experience. So he's always there on the at the box for giving the last advice, and then and on the bad moments, like he give us like the opportunity for belief and for going growing up again. So on the bad moments, is a team where supports you a lot.
Final question: we've said that you have a very big lead at the moment in the championship, but still 11 races, I think,
11
to go.
Still
a long,
too much.
long way to go in the championship. So not putting any pressure. Obviously, you are going to want to move up to Moto2, I guess, particularly if you win the championship this year. So I'm not asking for any secrets, but what does the next 2 or 3 years in your mind, what does it look like in terms of the progression?
Yeah, well, I when I was little, I always have a dream that is not to reach MotoGP. My dream is to win in each category, the three categories, Moto3, Moto2, MotoGP. So that's my main goal.
The full set.
So, yeah, without any hurry. Now I'm in Moto3. We will give our best for fight for the championship, and then let's see that.
I have a theory in my mind that says David Alonso goes to Moto2 next year, spends 2 years in Moto2, and then he's in MotoGP for the new regulations, the new technical regulations in 2027. It's a nice plan, huh?
Looks good. And it will be good. That's a fast way that we never know, and we just need to go leave the present and go step by step.
David, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you. I mean, you're a fantastic rider. It's really interesting to watch your career, so I'm hoping we'll have an opportunity to talk with you again.
For sure.
Not this weekend, but in a coming race, maybe next year, let's see. And best of luck this weekend.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you. All right, so I'm sat here in the GasGas Tech 3 hospitality unit with Jacob Ralston. Jacob, welcome on to Motorpod. Another first-time person on today. Let's start off by jumping into your 2024 Moto3 season to date. So from the outside, looking in, looks to be an incredibly solid start with, I think, 4 top 10 finishes that you've had and only one DNF so far, or retirement. So how do you see it? How's the year from your point of view?
I see it relatively good. A lot better than I was expecting, to be completely honest.
Okay. What were you expecting?
I was expecting to be, getting 15th, 14th, just around the, getting a few points. Not to be making kind of the big leaps that I have, to be honest. Not to talk up too much, but...
well, it's a results-based business, isn't it?
I'm proud of how I kind of handled the first half of the season. Of course, it's still a long way to go, but with the team now, I feel completely at home. In Qatar, there was a small mishap just with non-communication, just with the exit in qualifying, and ever since then, there hasn't been any issues, which is fabulous, and I'm feeling really kind of... Every time I leave the track, I'm really happy. Even if it's not the best riding during the day, the team's still kind of picking me up in a good mood and making me feel really at home here in this team.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about your path into the MotoGP paddock then. So I was doing a little bit of research and I was talking to Senna Aegis earlier on, and like him, you've come through the Asia Talent Cup, which maybe is a little bit of a surprise that there's so many Australians coming through that series. Obviously, it makes sense when you think about it. Then you had some stints in the European Talent Cup, Red Bull Rookies, and then on to the FIM Junior GP World Championship. So this is your first full season, of course, in the full Moto3 system with the legendary Tech 3 squad. So tell us about this journey from, I don't know, growing up in Australia as a young lad, all the way to being in a World Championship.
Yeah, quite a relatively quick and, not too quick. It's been kind of really serious since 2021. I did, as you said, the Asia Talent Cup in 2019, and I think my best was a fifth in that, so it was quite a good season. And then, surprisingly, I didn't get a second year selected for that. But we had a look at some options, and one came up to race in the European Talent Cup, so we went for it. It was probably a year earlier than we had planned, but we thought, why not? So Mum and I moved over here, and my dad and my sister stayed at home. And yeah, we arrived straight into COVID and all of that.
Difficult
times. It was Mum and I stuck in a hotel room for 105 days, which is
wow. Which
is difficult. But looking at it from now, it's it was a good memories. Mum and I still have a very loving relationship, which is awesome because it was a difficult time for her to be away from Dad and her daughter as well. Luckily, my sister's 4 years older than me, so she's turning 23 on Wednesday, so it was good. At least she was a bit older, and it kind of made it kind of separation a little bit easier.
Kind of shines a light on the level of sacrifice that goes into getting you guys to where you are.
Yeah, I don't think many people realise, like the Europeans, they kind of have to leave the kind of for the weekend, where us it's 10 months of the year, 11 months of the year. So it is very sacrificing. You basically have to sacrifice everything, and not just the rider. It's my mum as well, to be away from her family and. Yeah, it is a big change, but no, it had to be done to kind of survive in this sport and to make it, because Spain and Italy as well, but more so Spain, is where you have to be. As I said, the European Talent Cup in 2020 and 2021, I did quite a good season once it got underway in 2020, I think with one or two top 10 finishes, and then in 2021 I was able to get a win and two podiums. With that, at that time it was the kind of the CV Spanish Championship.
Yeah.
So it had the Moto3 Junior Championship at that time, and then the European Talent Cup. And then in 2022, it changed to Junior GP World Championship, and I moved up to race in that with Aspire Junior Team, which was a good championship to be into. That's the one you had to be in. And at that time, I got selected to race in Red Bull Rookies Cup as well.
Yeah.
Which, 2022, I think, was probably the hardest year I've ever had racing. Although it hasn't been a long journey. But yeah, it was just difficult in a new team and having quite a lot of struggles with the new, kind of adapting to a new bike and all those kind of situations. But yeah, it was good that I was able to, I think at the end of the season, I got a top 10 finish in both, which then I was able to get another year in Red Bull Rookies Cup and as well Junior GP with the same team. And I came into the season a lot more prepared than really the year before. We kind of threw everything at it because 2023 is the year if I want to make it to World Championship. If not, then another year in Junior GP, it might be a stretch to then make it to World Championship. But no, we just focused on the year ahead and each race at a time. And yeah, Dad did a lot of research and a lot of planning kind of on what we could do when we came back in February. We spent Christmas and New Year's at home in Australia. So yeah, I felt a lot more prepared going into the season. And yeah, both the second round in both championships, I was able to get a podium. Second place in both, which was super, super nice. And yeah, that kind of got the ball rolling a little bit.
Catapulted you into the world stage.
I kind of got a lot more confidence in myself. I knew that wasn't enough. Of course, I was able to get some good qualifying in Red Bull Rookies Cup. And then as well, two other podiums. And as well in Junior GP, was able to get another one or two, I believe. So yeah, I kind of just was quite consistent, and I think that's what kind of got the attention of some people. And Aston last year approached Hervé, and we had the Rookies Hospitality, and I said, just let you know I'm looking for a World Championship ride next year, thinking nothing of it. And yeah, I think just kind of showing the confidence and just going to ask kind of helped in
made an impression.
Yeah, it wasn't until really, really late that I knew that I had a seat. It was Misano, so just basically before the flyaways, that I was probably just going to do another year in Junior GP and maybe a third year in Red Bull Rookies Cup. And then we had some offers and some teams that were available, but we weren't able to afford it. And yeah, luckily this opportunity came around to kind of as a full factory rider.
One of the best Moto3 teams.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
for sure.
What a place to be.
To be a part of the Red Bull KTM family, but to be a part of that program and to have their support backing me. And yeah, to have the trust in Hervé and as well all the PM Mobility bosses and Red Bull bosses as well is really major. Mum and I were very, to be completely honest, I finished the rookies race and it wasn't a very good race in the Sunday morning at Misano, and I was very upset. just because I couldn't do it. I couldn't get a better result, and Mum had actually found out that night that I'd been offered a seat, and yeah, then I was able to get told then. But it's no, it was a bit difficult because I had to act disappointed that I wasn't getting a third year in Rookies Cup because I wasn't able to announce that I had a seat in here, and it was about a month and a bit that I had to keep it to myself.
Wow.
And like a lot of rumours have been that I was going to different teams and blah blah blah, but no, at the end it was a very big moment for my mum and dad, I think the most,
yeah.
Because of, yeah, to kind of take the weight off that it's kind of gone into World Championship now, it's a bit off the, like the previous years I've always had to pay to race because it's difficult for an Aussie or
yeah.
to race over here and to now have the kind of the weight off the shoulders that takes a couple hours off.
They can start to go and enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah, a little bit of pressure. Now I feel a lot more pressure than kind of the second half of the season, but I still don't feel too much because I know my role is the second rider and to continue to help Danny to win the World Championship, and that was the goal in Qatar at the first round. So yeah, it's still kind of, it hasn't really sunk in that I'm kind of in the World Championship. I think because I was here in Rookies Cup, it kind of made the transition a bit easier. But
sure.
I'm sure Phillip Island's going to change that completely.
I mean, I'm always amazed by you young guys. I mean, you are young guys, obviously. You know, just how you cope with this transition. Because, I mean, you guys, you Australians, are a long... You couldn't really get much further away from home than you are. I asked this to Senna earlier, because I'm always kind of curious about whether having a few other fellow Aussies in the pit lane is something you like in terms of camaraderie and that sort of commonality of background, or do you just kind of keep yourself to yourself after you've got your family here with you this weekend? So how is it for you?
Yeah, it's... Senna and I kind of, he started about 10 months before me on road, and we kind of grew up racing road together. Kind of my last 2 years of flat track, became really close mates with him and yeah, with their family. And we kind of just lost the friendship a little bit when we came over here because kind of all racing for the same spot, and it's normal. I think it's the same with anyone in any country. That does happen. But last year, when he was fighting for the Moto2 European Championship and kind of me, a Junior GP World Championship, it kind of brought us closer, and it's good to kind of have that friendship back. That there's, of course, when I'm moving up to Moto2, it's probably not going to be...
Gloves are off again.
Yeah, which is
racing.
It's racing. But for sure to have Jonathan, his dad, and Senna here as well, takes a lot of kind of stress as well that Mum has someone that she's known for years to be here, and to have people that we've known for a while is really nice as well. We both have our own friendships and relationships in the paddock as well, so it's not all that we're needing each other, but no, it's good that we're able to generally sometimes we've gone training together, and it's nice to still have that friendship there. But of course, at the end of the day, we're both, as well as all Aussies and everyone here, we're racing for the same prize at the end of the day, so yeah. No, it's nice to have him here. Yeah.
You mentioned that you set your ambitions fairly realistically at the beginning of the season, and it's obviously surpassed your expectations, as you admitted earlier on, quite understandably when you look at the results. So you're 12th in the standings at the moment. Having kind of perhaps reset your expectations a little bit as we go into the, it's not quite the second half of the season, as there's 11 races and we've had 9 so far, but what are the expectations? What's going to make you happy at the end of this season? Are you thinking that perhaps a top 10 just about in the standings at the end of the year is possible?
Winning Phillip Island will be good.
Yep, well.
that's for sure. I'd love that. And the only thing that'll be a better place in the world to do it than at your home GP.
Especially at Phillip Island.
Yeah. But no, basically the plan is still the same as the start of the year, to be Rookie of the Year. The goal has switched a little bit to where I think I will be kind of positioning. I do think it is possible to get a podium or two throughout the rest of this season. But no, I've got to stay grounded. I'm still a rookie in this class and I've still got a lot to learn. But no, just to continue getting just the Q2 qualifyings, which is probably the biggest annoying part of my season so far, is that I couldn't get it in Assen.
It's viciously competitive out there, isn't it?
Yeah. And to disappointingly get that DNF in Sachsenring after probably my best race to date. But it's... shit happens.
Part of the process.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and it's Moto3 as well. I don't think anyone can kind of predict a result of a Moto3 race, and congrats to them if they ever have, because it's...
It's, normally I'm watching it through my fingers like this, the average Moto3 race.
It's just to finish the season with a couple of podiums would be amazing, and the main goal is the Rookie of the Year. That is what I really want to fight for and have to my name would be good, and... I think I'm 10 points behind Vaqueros now, where I was only a few the previous round. So, yeah, got a bit of work to do, but I reckon I can.
What about Silverstone? I mean, I'm guessing you've raced there a few times in the rookies, so...
No, I've never been here.
Never been to Silverstone? No. Oh, really? Okay, So never raced at Silverstone before. Okay, so talk me a little bit about what's the process that you go through when you're approaching a brand new track then?
Yeah, it's difficult to do kind of a lot of, like in car racing, and in that they have the simulators and everything like that, but we don't have the technology to... At the moment, they have some simulators, but I find that they're not quite up to date. So it's a lot of basically visual learning, watching a bunch of races, watching a bunch of onboards, looking over the data and those type of things, and kind of like the track walk that we have later today, it's really taking it in, kind of the layout.
And will you kind of lean on the team in terms of data, in terms of the initial setup of the bike when you go out tomorrow morning, or have you got some ideas in terms of what you want?
They've got years and years of experience and information, so it's will be a lot of kind of, it's basically relying on them to have a decent setup for the first session whenever it's a new track. They all know my crew chief I've had for the last 2 years. So he understands me, which is good. And it's relatively a base setup that we have throughout each round and each track. So yeah, just to go out and to get a good, basically just to do laps. I just like to do laps and then the track and kind of adapt myself to the bike and not play around too much when I'm not on pace yet is the most important thing for me.
And finally, because I'm conscious of the time, I'm meant to be talking to Hervé shortly, although he probably is in deep conversation somewhere else.
I've seen him for 30 seconds today. He's a busy guy.
He's an incredible character. I mean, what is it like to have Monsieur Poncherolle as your team boss? I mean, obviously you've alluded to the fact that you approached him very bravely and obviously left an impression on him. But yeah, I mean, what's the relationship like with Hervé? He's quite the character.
Yeah, it's a really, really good relationship that I have. It's kind of feels like he's my French father a little bit with that. He's made it, Mum and I, really, really at home. And then when my dad has been here as well, he's made him feel at home. And I didn't realise, but he talks to Dad quite regularly on the race weekends, which is, I think, really, really good and really, really kind for my father to be halfway across the road and to Hervé to have the time to do that. But I really like him as a team boss. He's firm, he has to be firm and kind of funny and a character when the rest of the time. But no, he keeps us riders really, really focused.
Fit on the ground?
Yeah,
he helped to kind of manage?
Oh, for me at least. I feel like he's doing that. I'm not sure with the other boys, but he's produced plenty of great riders throughout the year, so I don't think there's a more experienced old man in the paddock.
Deeply, deeply knowledgeable man.
Yeah. And it's nice. He calls me regularly in the off weeks to just always check up, and it's, I think someone like that is... hopefully a long relationship that I'm able to keep building.
It's a really interesting insight into how a young lad like yourself gets on in a, what would you call it, melting pot that is the Moto3 World Championship. You know, super aggressive, super competitive, a lot of pressure. But as I say, you guys always amaze me how kind of steady and down to earth you are and supported by a great team. So it's been fascinating to talk to you. Obviously, we're a little bit time-gated, as always, at these events. But thank you very much indeed, Jacob, for talking to us. And hopefully have a chance to talk to you again at some point in the years to come and see how you get on through your career. But great to have you on, and wish you the best of luck at Silverstone, because one of the world's great tracks. I'm a little bit biased, obviously, as a Brit. But
I hope you enjoy it.
Hope you enjoy it.
No, I'm excited to get underway.
Cheers.
So thank you.
Thanks a lot. Right, well, here we are, final interview of the day, and delighted to say I'm joined today by Ivan Ortola, MT Helmets MSI rider. Ivan, welcome to Motopod, great to speak with you, welcome to the UK. I guess this is feeling a little unusual with this heat and sunshine for you in the UK.
Yeah, well, we are not getting used to it a little bit to this weather, but yeah, anyway... Happy to be here, also with this weather, because in Spain it's too hot now, and to be with this weather is good for us.
So this is cooler for you?
Yeah, it's
cool for us. It's hot for us and cool for you, Okay, so let's start by talking a bit about the 2024 season to date. You're a solid second position in the championship at this point. You had a magnificent win in Assen. How do you sum up your season so far?
I think that the season is going really well. It's true that we made little mistakes and bigs. For example, in Qatar, was not my mistake, but was a race for being the podium, you see. And also, for example, in America, we crashed and was a race for being also in the podium and to take a lot of good points. But yeah, anyway, we are really competitive and we are really consistent race by race.
Yeah. Now, I was having a little look at your history online. So I see that, like many of your competitors in this championship, you've been on a MotoGP machine for several years. You came through the European Talent Cup, the Red Bull Rookies, CEV Moto3 Junior Championship, and then into full World Championship Moto3. Most of that time, you've been on a KTM. This year, obviously, you're in the MT Helmets MSI squad, having your best year performance of your career. So have you found something with the KTM that's unlocked more performance for you this year, or is it just, you know, gradual experience?
I think it's experience also. Yeah, the most important is experience. I grow up, I improve a lot from last year, and now it's true that I feel in my prime in my best moment now of my career. So now just try to give my best race by race and try to keep this performance all the season.
Yeah. And how have you found the switch to the Pirelli tyre this year? Because obviously you've been in Moto3 for some time, so you have a lot of experience on the Dunlops previously. So what is your feeling on the Pirellis?
Yeah, it's different than Dunlop. It's true that Dunlop was not so fast, like no more fast than Pirelli, slower. But the tyres keep safe all the race, more or less, in the same pace.
So no drop?
No, not too much drop. And Pirelli is really, really fast in one lap, but then 4 or 5 laps, you feel a lot the drop, and you have to manage really, really good the tire.
And from a kind of race tactics point of view, is that a change that you quite like, the need to manage the tires and to choose when you push? Is that something that, again, with your experience, maybe that's a good thing for you?
Yeah, it's true that with the Pirelli, you need a strategy with the tires, because it changes a lot from one compound of tire, hard or soft, and it depends on the feeling you have with the bike for the same for the race with the tire. Also, you have to stay really focused on the, in the drop of the tire, because if you put too much at the beginning, at the end of the race, you don't have tire to push.
And so I'm assuming it's not the case that if you push them a little too hard and they drop, if you relax for a few laps, do they come better again, or is the drop the permanent, it doesn't come back?
The thing is to push at the beginning to try to cut the group, be as less as possible. Then in the middle of the race, try to stay at a good pace, not to stress too much the tire, and the last laps push again until the limit.
Push like hell.
Yeah.
David Alonso is currently 58 points ahead in the championship, but you've just had the summer break, and so with some time, 3-4 weeks or 4 weeks, I think, to reflect on your year so far, what's your kind of state of mind and your main objective as we start up this second part of the season? Do you go full attack, or
my objective?
Sorry to put pressure.
No, my objective and my dream is fight for the World Championship, and I will give my best, and we try to do it until the last race. And now focus race by race. What I said before, try to give my best all the race by race, and let's see what can be the result. But I will focus all the races to take my dream or my objective.
And just talking about the summer break, what does that look like for you? Did you take a short holiday, or you've been training? What kind of things did you do?
Yeah, for sure. I take one week doing nothing at home, because I like to stay at home, because when you are traveling all the time, when you come back to my country, to home, I want to stay calm and relax at home.
Sleep in your own bed for a change.
Yeah, I'm in my bedroom also sleeping, and to be up with my family also. And and then focus again with the training and to the races.
And what kind of training are we talking about? Are you in the gym every day, or you're on a gym, bike on the track? Or
Yeah, two of them, gym and bike.
Interesting. Okay. And I noticed that for this year, I think I have this right, you've joined Lando Norris's Quadrant Athlete Program. Talk us through how that came around, and what does taking part in that program, what does that kind of do or mean for you in the future, do you think?
It's a really, really good opportunity. Thanks.
What is it? It wasn't very clear for me.
Yeah, it's like to start with the esports team gaming, and they
like online gaming. You mean?
Yeah, online gaming. Yeah. Also, and of competition of video games.
Yeah.
And they move it to content creation, like for the media. They do videos with YouTubers. For YouTube also, they do merch with clothes and merchandising, and they do last year, for this year, they make a new program. It's called Quadran Athletes, and there's two guys, one girl and me, with motorbike. And yeah, we just make videos, or they take our images to it's like great content creator for internet.
Okay, interesting. And so, because obviously we know that Lando is a huge motorcycle racing fan, kind of has a tribute Rossi crash helmet design in Formula One. So how did you get involved with that program? Did they approach you, or how did it actually happen that you become part of the...
Ah, how it happened?
Yeah.
Last year, it arrived like an email to our...
Okay.
It arrived an email, something of Quadrant or Lando Norris, and we sent it to the manager, and my manager managed, and was really
an
important thing.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I'm interested to see in the future what that, you know, becomes more and more.
It's a really good opportunity, because being together with Lando, all the team, all his team, Quadrant, and to take this opportunity for show us to all the people is...
Yeah. So it increases your profile.
Yeah, it increases my profile, and yeah, it's really good for me and for also my sponsors.
Yeah, interesting. And just to finish up, you had a fourth place finish here at Silverstone last year. Where does the Silverstone track rank for you in terms of your favourite tracks, or maybe even least favourite tracks? I mean, what kind of result do you hope to achieve here this weekend?
Yeah, well, as always, I will try to win, because we are in a point of the championship that we have to cut points from the first, right, for the first. But yeah, Silverstone is a track, it's not the most I like, but it's really good for me. I like riding here, and it's like...
What is it in particular maybe that makes it not one of your favourites?
Not my favourite, but I go fast. I don't know I don't know why, but I go fast.
Yeah.
It's not one of my favorites. But yeah, it's like a particular, because a lot of fast corners and also slopes. And I have fun here.
Well, I mustn't keep you any longer. It's the end of the day. It's 5 o'clock. It's been a long, hot day, Thursday, day of champions here at Silverstone. So, Ivan, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
It's a great pleasure to meet you. And yeah, good luck in the second half of this season in your dream to chase the championship. And in particular, good luck this weekend. Hope you have a good result at Silverstone. And yeah, all the best for the future.
Thank you.
Cheers. All right, so it's 5 o'clock, just coming up on Saturday at Silverstone, and delighted to have Joel Kelso back on the show, just a short few months after you spoke with my colleague Jim McDowell in Circuit of the Americas. So, Joel, it's been a bloody good day today, third in practice this morning, and then third in qualifying, so front row start. Tell us about finding the groove this weekend, and obviously today in particular.
Yeah, it's been overall quite a good weekend. We're obviously on the front row. We just found a boost of confidence this morning, a bit more comfortable with the bike, and then the results just came along. So,
can you pinpoint what the confidence came from in terms of
the bike? Yeah, we just made a little setup change, and then just riding more confident. And at this track, it really makes a big difference, just committing to all the corners. And that's where we found the time, and it's been, obviously a great weekend so far.
Now, just going back a little bit, because I did a little bit of research when we were kind of planning to talk with you back in Kota and today. So 2019, you dipped your toe into several series, as I saw, European Cup, Moto3, Supersport 300 as well. Was the plan simply to find a competitive seat in Europe, or was the goal always Moto3?
Goal has always been to arrive to MotoGP, so we did the junior categories in the Junior Moto3 Championship, and we were successful there with 5 race wins, and then we stepped up to World Championship following that.
And never looked back since.
Yeah, exactly, mate, exactly.
So you made it into the Moto3 full-time, I guess it was, in 2021. This is your fourth season. Showed improvement every single year from there. Next year, you're moving over to the Angelus MTA team, who I believe you rode for in the Italian Championship.
Correct, yeah.
So tell us about that kind of decision. I'm not looking for digging on Bowie Motorsports, who you're with currently. But
yeah, no, really looking forward to next year's prospects. I really, gel with Alessandro Tonucci, the team owner of MTA Level Up. And they were the first one this year that showed a bit of interest. And then we had a few extra talks, and we ended up crossing the line super early, because I was the last to sign last year. So I wanted to get everything locked away and focus on for the rest of this season. So that was the idea behind it, get locked away. Really believe in MTA Level Up. And like I said, a good relationship with Tonucci. So I think we can do a great season next year together, and hopefully that'll be the stepping stone up into Moto2.
So was the anxiety sort of sort of to get signed early then, as you say, because of that stress of last year and having to wait around a bit?
Nah, not even that. It's just a matter of factors that play into it that I don't want to touch too much into.
No, okay, I'm not digging the dirt.
Yeah, like I said, I felt comfortable with them, and when they put me their final offer, I was happy with the contract, and we went ahead with that.
Just go for it sort of job.
That's it.
You had a really strong start this season, 8th in Qatar, and then you had a couple of 5th places in Portugal and Spain, I think it was. Between then and now, it's been a bit trickier in terms of results. So, just general competitiveness of the field, or did you go somewhere in the wrong direction on bike setup, or how do you sort of sum it up, having had the summer break to think things through a bit?
Yeah, we went through a little bit of a rough patch the last, well, I think it was 3-4 races, wasn't it? So, we went a little bit the wrong direction in the setup and my riding style for this new bike this year and the new tyres, and we just couldn't gel. We were there reasonably in the points, obviously, but not where we should be, where you see today, you know, in the front row and should be fighting for the podium each week. And it was just a dip in form, but that happens in a 22 race season, so hopefully it's upwards from now, and we can only bring home good results.
Yeah, well, you're on the right track so far as this weekend goes.
Exactly.
Now, Joel, you're one of the smaller stature riders, although most people in Moto3 are on the smaller side, of course. I mean, there's a couple of outliers, I suppose, like Veya, for example, but where do you see your future? Do you see yourself specialising in the smaller bike class, or would you like to get up to Moto2?
No, for sure, Moto2 and MotoGP, then I'm the same height as Marquez, same height as Pedroza.
Yeah.
You can make it work. Sergio Garcia right now is also not a tall stature and is leading the Moto2 World Championship. So I think it's you have your benefits as a small rider, but you also have your benefits as a tall rider, but you can mix it and you can make anything work if you put your mind to it.
And where do you stand on, maybe not the controversy around Moto3, but there's some talk about increasing the engine capacity, making the bikes a bit bigger to spread the field a little bit. I mean, where do you sort of come down on this from a safety standpoint? Because you're the one that's in the middle of this, mixing it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it could be great. Like, I mean, I am hoping to do a really good season next year to step up to Moto2. And purely that's because the Moto2 is more whoever the fastest is wins because of the bigger engine and the slipstream doesn't matter as much. But I mean, Moto3 is one of the best classes to watch for the fans and stuff. So, of course, it's really good for them. And finally, that's what brings this sport to a big hole, you know, is a MotoGP. Moto3 battles and stuff like that is the key point of it. So, yeah, if they went bigger engine, I don't see any downsides to it. But obviously, yeah, the Moto3 is always good battles, and that's what we're here to watch.
And I'll start winding up, but where do you stand on this potential with Liberty coming in? I mean, it's a big opportunity for riders.
Yeah.
If they could, you know, because social media presence, you know, having a personality, getting yourself out there, has big potential benefits, financial amongst other things, for riders. So where
are you
excited about it?
I think the prospect of actually bringing Liberty Media in is really good for the sport. It brings in a lot more budget into the MotoGP. I think it's going to be also really beneficial for riders outside of Europe, like myself from Australia, as a exposure point of view and sponsor point of view from other countries. I can think this can only be great things that can come from it.
Yeah, interesting. And let's just very briefly, Silverstone. I didn't check back on your past results here. As a track, I mean, is it one you like? Tricky sections or favourite sections of the track?
Yeah, well, I only came here last year because the first year I was injured. So I only came here last year. And yeah, it wasn't bad, mate. I stayed with the front group, qualified at P5, I think. So always has been a quite decent track for me. I think the Aussies also love, like, fast corners and, you know, faster track, like Phillip Island. So it takes a lot of confidence in these corners. I think that's where we really shine compared to, like, a little bit hard-breaking, tighter tracks. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying my time at the moment here.
Podium possible tomorrow?
Oh, I bloody hope so, mate. I bloody hope so. Okay,
Well, Joel, appreciate your time. It's the end of the day and everybody's got to get on, so, and I've got to drive home for a couple of hours. So wish you the best of luck for the race tomorrow. I'll be in the stands cheering you on, and wish you a safe ride, successful ride, and so you get on the podium.
Appreciate it, mate. Really, thank you.
Cheers, bud. Cheers.